You will also inform the Admiralty that their resources in the Belderone system should be prepared to jump to whatever target systems Lord Vader and Governor Tarkin deem significant. He leaned toward the holocam's lens. Deputy Director Ison and the rest of you are to devote yourselves to unraveling the intentions of our new enemy.
Imperial security will not rest until it has done so,
Ison said with a stiff bow of his head.
We will apprehend them, my lord,
Rancet added,
even if that requires repositioning half the capital ships in the fleet.
The Carrion Spike reverted to real space in the Feel system, with the eyes of the six shipjackers focused on the main display of the sensor suite.
Anything?
Teller asked Carla.
No sign of the Predator so far.
Teller waited a long moment, then breathed a guarded sigh of relief and got to his feet. Time to get down to business. He turned to Salik.
Coordinates for Galadran.
Salik watched the navicomputer.
Coming up.
The words had scarcely left the Gotul's full-lipped mouth when Carla said,
Teller.
I knew it.
Hask said, pacing through tight circles while Teller hurried back to the sensor suite. Carla was sitting stiffly in the chair, staring fixedly at the display.
The Predator. Right on cue,
Arto said from the far side of the command cabin. Teller blinked in disbelief. In a gesture of concern, Carla touched his forehead below the dangling headcloth.
It's the Predator. And she's coming for us all speed.
Not even Vader could do this,
Teller said.
There's a tracking device hidden somewhere aboard this ship.
Or on the hull, or concealed in a landing strut, or just about anywhere,
Hask said.
But unless you want to power down and perform a full EVA search, you better come up with a revised plan.
Teller clenched his jaw.
We're not revising anything. Not now, not any time.
He glanced around him. Artos and Salik nodded, then Kala and Honora, and finally Hask. Teller rolled his head through a circle to work the kinks out of his neck and nodded to Hask.
You've got the comm board.
As Carla stood up from the chair, Teller added,
Doc, you and Carla better get yourselves positioned.
Then he turned to Salik to say,
Jump us to Galadran.
Seated in the co-pilot's chair, Tarkin watched Vader expectantly as the Predator emerged from hyperspace.
Full ahead,
the Dark Lord said. Tarkin was glad to oblige, though he saw nothing through the viewports but star-strewn space and nothing on the sensor screens but background noise. One moment Vader's gloved hands were clamped tight on the yoke, then they flew to the navigation console.
They've jumped to light speed again.
Just as I would have, Tarkin said. Vader fell silent, then lifted his head as if just roused from a nap and swiveled to the navicomputer display, the fingers of his left hand punching the control pad keys.
Galadran,
he said at last. Tarkin gave him a moment to complete the request for jump coordinates.
The chamber, he said. That's how you're tracking them.
Vader glanced at him, as unreadable as ever, but said,
Very discerning of you, Governor.
Tarkin called up a star map of the Galadran system and began to study it.
An even shorter jump. Two populated planets.
He frowned in uncertainty. Why not jump farther afield? An error in judgment? Vader made no reply. Tarkin retrieved additional information on the system. An Imperial space station in fixed orbit at Galadran 3. The on-screen image of the station showed it to be an outmoded wheel with numerous space docks radiating from the perimeter.
There is little point in alerting the station,
Vader said,
as we will arrive long before a subspace transmission.
The station won't be able to see the Carrion Spike coming in any event.
Vader grunted and reached for the hyperdrive control arm. Beyond the viewports, the star field elongated, and the Predator leapt to light speed. Tarkin sat back in his chair, allowing his vision to adjust to the mottled corridor the ship had entered. No past or future here, he told himself. times blank canvas. And yet he couldn't keep his thoughts from running wild and in all directions. Reflecting on Jova's sage advice, he could recall countless instances of each scenario playing out during his years of training on the plateau. Animals had escaped despite the team's best efforts to track and hunt them down. Others had hidden and sprung from concealment. On one occasion, nearly making a meal of the Rhodians, had Jova, Tarkin, and Zealot not come to their rescue. Some with braying calls had summoned reinforcements too numerous for the humans and Rhodians to compete with, and they had been the ones to go hungry. And yes, there had been numerous instances of hunted animals skulking off to sniff out more vulnerable game, softer targets. In deep space, similar circumstances had transpired. Pirate groups had gone hungry, sounded calls for support, abandoned the greater Seswena for less fortified zones, and employed every method of concealment, taking every advantage of the glower of starlight, the glittering tails of comets, iridescent clouds of interstellar gas. Again, Tarkin tried to assemble all the pieces. The counterfeit distress call, the sneak attack on Sentinel, the bait set out on Mercana, the theft of the ship, and now the flight. But to where? To what end? Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Vader prepare the Predator for the transition to sublight. The timeless corridor narrowed and vanished, and the starlines compacted to pinpoints of light, skewing slightly as the ship reverted to real space. No sooner had Vader engaged the ion drives than proximity alarms began to squeal, and something large and white caromed off the forward deflector shield. Tarkin quickly captured an image of the object on one of the display screens. It was the mangled and frosted body of a stormtrooper. In the middle distance, fiery explosions flared at the edge of Galadran 3's atmospheric envelope. Plumes of incandescence, like stellar prominences, erupted into space. Vader firewalled the throttle and the Predator raced deeper into the system, the space station coming into unassisted view, an arc of its silvery rim blown wide open and hemorrhaging gas, flames, objects, and bodies. The source of the destruction was invisible to the naked eye and the Predator's scanners, making it appear as if green packets of bundled energy were being fired from deep space. Even so, particle beam weapons, emplaced along the station's curved outer surface, were returning fusillades that streamed futilely into the void. Like some sea creature lunging forward to chew flesh and withdraw before it could be counterattacked, the invisible menace continued to advance and retreat, its lasers opening surgical lacerations along the spokes of the wheel as if intent on separating the rim from the hub. Larger explosions blossomed along with dense clusters of superheated ejecta. Tarkin bent to the controls, searching for a heat signature, gravitational flux, evidence of propellant glow, anything that might pinpoint the location of the carrion spike. All the while, well aware that the ship was beyond his efforts to track. She could conceal herself from any sensor, contain her own reflection and heat, accelerate out of danger, maneuver beyond the capacity of any ship her size. But worse still was Tarkin's realization about her new crew. They weren't mere shipjackers. They were, as Vader had intuited early on, dissidents, partisans with a deadly agenda to fill. Flights of ARC-170 and V-Wing starfighters, like swarms of stinging insects, were accelerating from the station's launch bays in search of the veiled thing that was pummeling their nest. Keeping to the edge of the battle to avoid being inadvertently targeted, Vader abruptly veered the Predator starboard in an obvious attempt to parallel the curving storm of destruction the carrion spike was sowing. Tarkin saw a rash of melt circles erupt along the station's already pockmarked hull, an efflorescence of globular explosions. Vader changed vectors and decelerated to match the Predator's speed to that of the carrion spike.
"We have you now," Tarkin heard him mutter.
Through the viewports, he could see the ARC-170s and the V-Wings playing a dangerous game with their opponent, speeding directly into hails of energy bolts in the hope of forcing the carrion spike to betray her location and sacrificing themselves in the process. His hands tight on the yoke, Vader called out,
"Sergeant Crest, prepare to fire."
The stormtrooper's voice crackled from the cockpit nunciator.
Standing by, Lord Vader. But we have no visual on the target.
Follow the tracers back to their source, Sergeant. And pour all the power of those quad lasers toward the point of origin.
Shots in the dark, Tarkin said.
Only from your vantage,
Vader said. Then he took his hands from the steering gilt and turned to him to add,
Your ship, flank speed.
Tarkin pulled the co-pilot's yoke into his lap and began to slalom the Predator through the debris field spewed by the crippled station. At the same time, Vader swiveled to position himself at the controls for the forward guns. Wary of allowing the ion engines to overheat, Tarkin slewed the ship through clusters of slagged alloy, incinerated starfighters, and tumbling bodies. Far to starboard, the explosions were thinning. The carrion spike had enough firepower to destroy the entire station, but the dissidents were tapering off the attack, perhaps to reserve energy for future targets. Was that the goal, Tarkin wondered, to use his ship to inflict as much damage as possible? The thought of having the carrion spike leave such a legacy hollowed him.
Commence fire,
Vader said. Hyphens of raw energy surged from the Predator, the chuddering of her reciprocating quad lasers loud in the cockpit. Ahead, fire spattered against the carrion spike's ray and particle shields, and for the briefest instant the ship was revealed. Quickly then, the Predator's beams were streaking into empty space. Tarkin yawed to port, hoping to evade the carrion spike's response. But the shipjackers yawed with him, and their first salvo nearly overwhelmed the Predator's inferior shields. Tarkin pushed the yoke away from him, skimming the atmosphere of Galadron 3 with the carrion spike hewing to his trajectory and preparing to pounce. In the grip of a second barrage, the Predator shook in his grip, and the console lights began to flicker.
Drop behind them,
Vader said. Tarkin rushed a deceleration burn and starboard feint, hoping to trick the shipjackers into overflying the Predator. Instead, the carrion spike leapt and spun through a half-turn, which Tarkin grasped only when he saw a tempest of energy beams converging on the cockpit. Tarkin's sudden swerve and spin almost threw Vader from his chair. They're employing the pintle guns, Tarkin said in a rush. They'll burn right through us. He risked a glance at Vader. We've one chance to survive this. Redirect all power to the aft shields. Vader took Tarkin at his word, and the Predator slowed significantly as a result. The carrion spike's beams found their mark, all but driving the smaller ship forward.
Shields at 40%,
Vader said. Tarkin pulled on the stuttering yoke, taking the Predator into a sudden climb, but there was no escaping his own ship. Another barrage rattled the Predator to her rivets. Vader slammed his fist on the console.
They have jammed our instruments. Shields at 20%.
A powerful explosion aft worked its way forward to the cockpit, conjuring fire from the sparking instruments, stripping the ship of shields and propulsion, and leaving the Predator dead in space. Damage assessment, Teller called toward the audio pickup as he scrambled to his feet in the carrion spike's command cabin. Still strapped into the pilot's chair, Salek was in the midst of bringing some of the stunned systems back to life, tufts of his fur wafting through the cabin on currents of recycled air. Anora's voice issued through one of the speakers.
Airlock controls for the escape pods are fried.
We're not going to be needing the pods, Anora. Move on.
Hask's voice was the next to ring out.
Fire in cargo hold 3 has been extinguished.
Lock down the hold and disable the exhaust fans, Teller said quickly. I don't want us venting any smoke or fire suppressant foam.
Clapping grit from his hands, he dropped himself into the comm officer's chair.
Kala, where are you?
The speaker crackled.
Aft maintenance bay. The hyperdrive generator seems to be operable, but it's making some awfully strange noises. Don't know what it will do when we jump. Can't now, anyway, until self-diagnostics are complete.
How long?
10 minutes. 15 at the most.
Gala's forced exhalation could be heard through the speaker.
They knew just where to hit us, Teller.
Of course they did. It's Tarkin's ship.
And they tracked us through hyperspace again.
Selleck spoke before Teller could reply.
The station has launched another squadron of starfighters.
They're flying search formations, radiating out from the Parsec Predator.
Teller called up a magnified view of the incapacitated ship.
I was hoping they'd mistake the Predator for us, but Tarkin must still have limited comm.
He shook his head in vexation.
We must have put on quite a show for the station personnel.
The Starfighters,
Selleck repeated.
Teller watched the ARC-170s and V-Wings begin to fan out.
Do we have sublight?
We do, but I'm worried those Starfighters will sniff out our ion signatures.
Worry more about Vader. He's probably guiding them right to us.
Teller thought for a moment.
Take evasive action. Full silent running.
Selleck glanced at him.
Shouldn't we finish them off? I mean, when will we have another chance like this? To kill two of the Empire's chief commanders?
They're replaceable.
Tarkin, maybe. But Vader?
For all we know, the Emperor has a dozen more like him in deep freeze. Besides, we need to make the most out of this ship while we've got her.
Selleck nodded.
I reluctantly agree.
Reluctance is fine.
Teller swung toward the audio pickup. Doc, where are you?
Cargo hold one,
Arto said.
And there's something here you need to see before we go to light speed.
Teller looked at Selleck.
You okay here?
Go,
the Gotl said, fairly bleating the word.
Teller pushed himself out of the chair and hurried through the command cabin hatch into the after deck. Racing through the conference cabin, he took the starboard connector to the turbo lift, only to find it unresponsive. He hurried back to the main cabin and took the emergency stairwell down one level to the engine room, then wormed his way through a narrow cofferdam that accessed the cargo holds. As he came through the hatch of cargo hold one, he saw Artos crawling out from around a large black sphere set into a hexagonal dais that took up most of the hold.
What's so important I need to see it?
The Mon Cal got to his big feet and gestured to the sphere.
This?
Teller regarded the sphere from top to bottom.
Yeah, I saw this during our initial recon. What of it?
To begin with, do you know what it is?
Kala thinks it's a component of the stealth system.
No, it is not.
Artos cut in.
If the cloaking device was powered by hybridium, then yes, that would provide a possible explanation. But this ship's stealth system runs on stygium crystals, which obviates the need for a device of this sort.
Okay, Teller said in a tentative way. Artos indicated the sphere's vertical seams.
The hemispheres are designed to separate longitudinally, but I can't find a control panel or any way to prompt a device to open.
Teller walked partway around the sphere.
You think it's housing a tracker of some sort?
Our scanners haven't detected any.
Teller made his eyes bright with mystification.
So? I think this is the homing beacon.
Teller gaped at him.
What I mean to say is that I think this belongs to Vader, and that Vader was able to follow us to Feel, then Galadran, by tracking his property.
Teller's brow wrinkled.
Look, he may be more machine than man, but...
We've combed the ship forward to aft and belly to spine and found nothing in the way of a locator capable of tracking us through hyperspace.
Teller's comlink chimed before he could answer.
The hyperdrive generator's completed its self-test,
Kala updated.
It's still protesting, but we should be good to go.
Then get down here.
He calmed the cockpit.
Selleck, navigate to the jump point, but hold there until I give you the word. We've got something to take care of before we go to hyperspace.
Understood,
Selleck said.
Oh, and one more thing. Destroy Galadran's hyperspace buoy on the way out. We don't want anyone following us this time.
Vader stood unmoving at the Predator's forward viewports, the scarlet light of emergency illuminators reflecting off his helmet, the black orbs of his helmet mask seemingly fixed on the escaping carrion spike.
Galitran Station is dispatching a shuttle and readying their fastest corvette for pursuit, Tarkin said from the co-pilot's chair. Sergeant Crest reports 3 dead.
Your ship is still in the system,
Vader said slowly. Then turning his head, he barked.
Squadron Commander, are you hearing me?
A warbling voice drifted from the cockpit annunciator.
Loud and clear, Lord Vader. Awaiting your orders.
Commander, direct your starfighter squadron toward the bright side of Galadran 4's outermost moon.
My scanners aren't showing anything in that vicinity, Lord Vader.
I will supply all the targeting data you need, Commander.
Affirmative, Lord Vader. We're keeping the battle and tactical nets open.
Tarkin pressed the padded speaker of a comm headset to his left ear. Station nav computers are calculating all possible egress points. Vader clasped his hands behind his back.
The Palemian trade route is a short jump from this system.
Escape is not their intention, Tarkin said. Vader turned away from the viewport to look at him. If escape were their plan, Tarkin said, they would have already done so. He cleared his throat meaningfully. No, they have something else in mind. Perhaps to strike at another target. Once more he pressed the headpiece speaker to his ear, then toggled a switch that routed the audio feed to the annunciator.
Calculations are ready, Governor Tarkin,
a deep voice announced.
We're transmitting them to the shuttle so that you and Lord Vader will have immediate access to them.
Thank you, Colonel, Tarkin said into the headset mic. In the meantime, I want a list of local systems that host Imperial resources.
I can provide that information now, Governor. We have a large garrison in the Felucia system. Arenvar has a small dirtside outpost. Namcharios has both a mining colony and a small Imperial prison facility. We have additional outposts at Trogan and Jomark, and of course the naval base and RM Facility 4 deep dock at Belderone.
What do we have parked at RM, Colonel?
Several CR-90 corvettes, 2 Carrack-class light cruisers, a couple of Victories, and a Venator-class destroyer, the Liberator.
Stand by, Colonel. Tarkin muted the audio feed and swiveled toward Vader. Are you reasonably certain that our particle beams wounded them? Vader nodded. If the hyperdrive is damaged, they might opt to lie low to effect repairs, Tarkin said. Vader nodded again.
Or go in search of replacement parts.
And if they're not wounded?
Continue their mission,
Vader said with finality. Tarkin fell silent for a long moment. Never having had an opportunity to put the carrion spike through her paces, the recent engagement had left him with an even more profound appreciation for the ship. Why didn't they kill us when they had the chance? Could it be they believed they were being pursued by the Sugi crime lord?
No,
Vader said sharply.
They know that we are here.
Then perhaps they didn't kill us because they have a rendezvous or a schedule to keep.
Perhaps,
Vader said. Tarkin swiveled in place. Belderone?
Too heavily fortified, even for your corvette.
Felucia, then? In reprisal for the way the Republic left it?
Of no significance.
Renvar is merely an outpost. So, Namcharius? Vader took a moment to respond.
Instruct Belderone to send the Liberator there.
Tarkin activated the headset microphone. Colonel, we need to contact Belderone and Coruscant, he started to say, then cut himself off on hearing Vader growl. What is it?
Whoever they are resourceful.
The Dark Lord turned slowly from the viewports.
They have jettisoned the meditation chamber.
The voice of the Starfighter Squadron Commander issued from the annunciator.
Lord Vader, our scanners have detected an object.
Commander, order your pilots to open fire along that vector. Lasers and proton torpedoes, if they have them.
Lord Vader, we have a detonation,
the commander said a moment later. Tarkin leapt from the chair to stand alongside Vader. Did they hit the carrion spike? The answer was slow to arrive.
Lord Vader,
the commander said.
The enemy has taken out the system hyperspace buoy. Our sensors are also picking up wake rotation readings.
They have jumped to light speed,
Vader said. Tarkin ran a hand over his high forehead. Then they've managed to make themselves untraceable as well as invisible.
Chapter 14. A Case of Do or Die. Its tiered roof, a canopy of scanner, sensor, and communications arrays, Naval Intelligence Headquarters heaved from Coruscant's metallic crust as if thrust up by tectonic forces from the depths of the planet. Along with the palace and the Byzantine Compnor Arcology, which housed the Imperial Security Bureau, the Ubiquitrate, and other ambiguous organizations, Naval Intelligence was the third point of the Federal District's Supreme Triangle. The fact that the shielded, hardened, near-windowless complex more resembled a prison than a fortress had given rise to speculation that its sheer walls were designed as much to keep the agency's staff of tens of thousands of military officers inside as to keep ordinary Coruscanti out. Constructed soon after the end of the war, atop monads that had once made up the Republic's strategic center, Naval Intelligence was a nexus for gathering and analyzing transmissions that poured in from across the Ecumenopolis and from all sectors of the expanding empire. And yet its operations were not conducted in complete secrecy. During the construction phase, micro-holocams had been installed in every nook and cranny so that the actions and conversations of every staffer could be monitored at any hour of the day or night. Not by the members of the Senate's various oversight committees, however, but by the Emperor and the most trusted members of the ruling council. Everyone involved with Naval Intelligence knew that the cams were there and had gradually grown accustomed to their presence. While the officers and others no longer played to the spy eyes as they had early on, they went about their business well aware that at any given moment they might be on stage. Just now, the joint chiefs of the Empire's military were gathered. Admiral Antonio Motti, General Cassio Targ, Rear Admirals Ozzel and Gergerod, and others, along with several top officers from Compnor, including Director Armand Isard, ISB Deputy Director Harris Eisen, and Colonel Wolf Yularen. Naval Intelligence was represented by Vice Admirals Rancit and Screed, who had requested the meeting. With the bright light of late afternoon pouring through the tall windows of the palace spire's pinnacle room, Sidious studied their holograms from his chair, using controls in the armrest to choose from among several cams and to provide alternative vantages. The droid 114D stood by him, one of its appendages plugged into an interface socket that routed holofeeds to the summit from what had been a Jedi communications suite in the base of the spire.
"Tint the windows," Sidious said, without taking his gaze from the projected holograms.
"Of course, Your Majesty."
With the daylight dimmed, the cyan-hued holograms acquired more detail. The intelligence officers had asked for an audience in the palace, but Sidious had turned them down. Similarly, he had declined to attend their meeting virtually. As nettlesome as it was to have learned that the dissidents in possession of Tarkin's starship had embarked on a killing spree in the Outer Rim, Sidious found the cachet-driven spitefulness of the intelligence chiefs to be even more tedious. So he had dispatched Mos Amida and Ars Dangor in his stead.
"I accept that dissidents have managed to wreak havoc in an isolated star system,"
Eisen was saying.
"But the fact remains that they brought only one ship to bear on our facility."
"One ship capable of hiding itself from scanners,"
Rancit said.
"Outmaneuvering our starfighters, outracing a star destroyer."
"Permit me to amend my statement then,"
Eisen continued as Rancit allowed his words to trail off.
"One fast and powerful ship. Still, they used it to launch an attack on an unimportant outpost."
"The start of a campaign of destruction,"
Screed interjected. The officers were grouped around a large circular table, with Mos Amida and Ars Dangor occupying prominent seats. Above the center of the table floated 3D star maps, wire-frame displays, and plotting panels, some showing the locations of Outer Rim bases and installations, others the disposition of ships of the fleet, with symbols denoting star destroyers, dreadnoughts, corvettes and frigates on down to pickets and gunboats.
We've no proof that the shipjackers are on a campaign,
Eisen said, taking up the challenge.
Targeting the space station may have been their way of evading capture by Governor Tarkin and Lord Vader.
As a diversion, in other words,
Screed said, in elaborate disbelief, his ocular implant glinting in the light from the holograms.
Governor Tarkin came close to losing his life to his own ship. Given his experience and expertise, we have to assume that the Carrion Spike is in the hands of a very competent and dangerous group.
I've known Governor Tarkin for over 20 years,
Rancid said in reinforcement,
and I can assure you that if he considers the group to pose a serious threat to the Empire, then they are nothing less.
Eisen blew out his breath and shook his head.
Repositioning our resources from Belderone to fortify a couple of minor installations was reckless. We can't run the risk of curtailing pacification campaigns or hunting down former separatists for a strategy of defeat in detail at the edge of civilized space.
And what if the Shipjackers' campaign should expand into the mid-rim?
Rancid said.
The ship gives them the ability to strike almost anywhere in the galaxy.
Eisen gaped at him for a long moment.
Is it the Navy's aim, then, to redeploy the entire fleet to effect system denial to a handful of dissidents?
In major star systems, yes,
Rancid said.
Should the situation warrant it?
Rear Admiral Motti spoke to it.
At the risk of sounding too cavalier about this, Governor Tarkin's ship does not have unlimited firepower.
The traditional cut of his brown hair and the boyish features of his clean-shaven face belied an attitude of perpetual sarcasm.
Whatever course we take, the ship will eventually cease to be a threat.
I concur,
Eisen chimed in.
It's one ship. I recommend we let it go.
Mos Amida came to his feet in anger.
Clearly all of you are oblivious to the real danger posed by this group of privateers. We are not concerned about remote outposts or even important installations. The ship must be captured or destroyed because of the danger it poses to the Emperor's unchallengeable reign.
That is just the point I was about to make, Vizier,
Rancid said, when voices around the table had quieted. He was facing Amida, but in such a way that he seemed to be speaking more to one of the monitoring cams, as if aware that Sidious was observing and addressing him directly.
Imperial Security initially stressed that the communications cache on Mercana could potentially be used to disseminate anti-Imperial propaganda. Now Deputy Director Eisen fails to grasp that the intent of the dissidents may be to use Governor Tarkin's ship for that very purpose.
Raven-haired man's man, Director Armand Isard, was about to intervene when a junior intelligence officer seated at a comm board spoke first.
Sirs, sorry to interrupt, but we're receiving reports of another unprovoked attack in the Outer Rim.
Namchurios,
Screed said.
Just as Governor Tarkin predicted.
No, Admiral,
the comm officer said.
Lukaszek.
It was General Tag's turn to rush to his feet. The scion of a wealthy, influential family, he was tall and thickly built, with a broad face defined by long, flaring sideburns.
Tagco has operations at Lukaszek.
We're in reception of a live holofeed,
the junior officer updated. Rancid had amplified an area of the star map and was gazing up into it.
They've jumped clear across the sector, inward of the Palemian trade route.
He looked at Motti.
Do we have any resources there?
Motti had a datapad in hand and was gazing at the device's display screen.
A small garrison of ground troops and a squadron of V-wing starfighters protecting Tagco's mining interests. The holofeed is streaming,
the junior officer said. Above the table's inset projector, a holographic video of the attack resolved and stabilized. Centered in the field floated Tagco's city-sized orbital processing plant. An entire section of it engulfed by spherical explosions, the company logo effaced by melted metal. Quanta of unleashed energy were raining down on the facility, blowing chunks of it into local space. Drifting into view between the continuous barrage of beams were pieces of V-wing starfighters and prosaic ore haulers, one of which was falling toward dun-colored Lukaszek in flames, its ablative shields glowing red-hot. Farther below, clouds of thick black smoke were coiling into the smudged sky.
They've targeted surface operations as well,
Tag said, still on his feet and clenching and unclenching his hand. Ison glanced from him to the junior officer at the comm board in visible alarm.
Who's transmitting this holovid? Is it being sent live by an orbital facility? An outlying ship? The transmission is arriving on an Imperial holonet frequency,
the junior officer said.
Yes,
Ison said,
but the point of view. It looks as if one of our own ships is the aggressor.
Screed and Motti traded worried glances. In the summit of the palace spire, Sidious sat back into his chair, folding his arms across his chest as sinuous currents of the dark side played through him, and as if he meant to contain them.
Have you puzzled out what is happening, droid?
He asked.
Yes, your majesty,
114D said, simultaneous with a further update from the junior officer.
Sirs, we have confirmation that the holovid is being transmitted by the carrion spike.
Sidious swiveled toward the tinted windows, behind which the sky above and Coruscant below were the color of ash. Narrowing his gaze, he reached out for Darth Vader, whom he sensed was observing the holovid as well.
Yes, Lord Vader, Sidious sent through the Force. You shall have your starfighter.
Moving with fierce purpose, Tarkin exited the Liberator's hangar command post and walked briskly along the dorsal flight deck, passing starfighters and ground effect vehicles as he closed on the shuttlecraft awaiting him. The Star Destroyer's massive overhead doors were closed, and the light on the flight deck was dim. The captain of the Liberator was standing at the foot of the shuttle's boarding ramp. A short man with grey hair and a meticulously trimmed beard, he saluted as Tarkin approached. Sorry we couldn't be of more help, Governor Tarkin. Tarkin gestured in dismissal. You're not to blame, Commander. You came when called, and for that alone you have my gratitude. The Commander nodded. Thank you, sir. Tarkin extended his hand, and the Commander shook it decorously. Are you returning to Belderon Base? Tarkin asked.
No, sir. Coruscant has ordered us to jump directly to Ord Cestus.
Tarkin's brow furrowed in question.
Why so far down the Palemian?
Triage redeployments, the commander said. As a result of what happened at Lucasek, I suppose.
The same at Centauri's and Lantilles.
No telling where your... the missing ship is going to revert next.
Perhaps, Tarkin said, and let it go at that. He ascended the boarding ramp and walked aft, settling into a seat in the main cabin. The Theta-class shuttle's only passenger. High overhead, the Liberator's hangar doors parted down the middle and retracted, and the shuttle rose off its skids on repulsor lift power, dropped its wings, and sped toward its rendezvous point, a pod-shaped support carrier named the Goliath, which had recently arrived from deep dock at Ord Mantell. Tarkin had a portside glimpse of bleak Nam Chereus as the shuttle angled away from the Star Destroyer. The system's sun providing barely enough light to illuminate the planet, let alone warm it to human standards. Tarkin turned inward to consider the commander's remarks. Capital ships redeploying from bases as distant as Centauri's and Lantilles, all because of the carrion spike. He trusted that naval command knew better than to disperse the fleet too thinly, though there was no denying that the shipjackers had once again taken everyone by surprise. That might not have been the case if Coruscant had placed Lucasek on alert, but no one, including Tarkin, had given much thought to the possibility that the dissidents would target a lightly defended Tagco mining concern. Entering the star system with an altered transponder signature but transmitting authentic Imperial codes, the carrion spike had opened fire on both the orbital facility and groundside operations before Lucasek could react. Jova would have applauded the shipjacker's tactics, the idea of masking oneself in the scent of one's enemy. He could still summon the odors of musky excretions he had been forced to smear over himself during hunts or surveillance exercises on the plateau. The rodent Jova had struck with the airspeeder one night had only been the beginning. After that had come the dizzying, often nauseating scents of sly vulpines, antlered ruminants, squat felines.
but in countless situations the excretions had given them the upper hand, allowing them to kill or infiltrate as needed. Except at the spike. But of course, that wasn't the idea. At Lukaszek, the shipjackers hadn't even bothered to activate the carrion spike's stealth systems until they had reached their target. They were experimenting, perhaps in preparation for their next attack. Deflector shields had protected the mining facility for a time, but its fate had been sealed. The destruction and casualties the ship had left in her wake were consistent with what she had wrought at Galadran. When the shipjacker's holonet transmission had been received by the Liberator, Tarkin had tried to convince himself that it was another counterfeit, that the holovid had been cobbled together from wartime news feeds and created images, as had been the case at Sentinel and on Mercana. In his eagerness to prove himself correct, and to the bewilderment of some of the Liberator's petty officers, he had practically placed himself inside the blue hollow field, searching for evidence of corruption that would have identified the feed as fake. But he found no such signs. It had taken some time to disabuse himself of the notion that the shipjackers were deliberately provoking him, and to accept that they were merely making use of the carrion spike's sophisticated communication suite to call attention to their agenda, as Count Dooku had managed to do early on in the Clone Wars. And like Dooku, the shipjackers had succeeded in broadcasting the Lukaszek holovid live over civilian holonet frequencies to thousands of outer and mid-rim star systems before Coruscant was able to shut down vast portions of the communications grid. Still, the damage had been done. According to the latest reports from Naval Intelligence, the shipjackers were already attracting media attention in some of the outer systems, and certain members of the ruling council were worried about blowback, that disaffected factions might begin to think that the Empire was vulnerable and that imitators would spring up, convinced that they, too, could make themselves heard far and wide. Tarkin had also learned that the contentious debate between Imperial security and naval intelligence on how best to proceed had yet to subside, especially with the carrion spike on the loose once more, hiding in hyperspace, or lurking in some remote or unpopulated star system. It appeared, however, that Vice Admirals Rancid and Screed were currently the gears getting the most grease, as the Admiralty had been granted permission by the Emperor to deploy forces to unprotected worlds along the Polemian trade route and the Hydean Way. That, in any case, was how the Goliath came to be at Nam Chereus, and apparently why the Liberator had been deemed needed at Ord Cestus. No sooner had the support carrier arrived than Vader had had himself ferried aboard, as it had brought from Coruscant his personal starfighter. Tarkin had been busy since he and Vader had parted company, speaking with Commander Cassell at Sentinel Base, with intelligence assets on Mercana, and with the commanders of Imperial posts throughout the sector, and as well with Wolf Yularen, who had his hands full keeping the peace among the intelligence agencies. Tarkin had spent the past 10 hours in the Liberator's data center, poring over star maps and charts and performing complex calculations. He needed sleep, but sleep would have to wait until after he met with Vader. The shuttle's wings folded upward as it lazed through a magcon field into the support escort's main hangar. The ship's commander and a dozen of his top officers and black-uniformed non-coms were standing eyes front on the deck as Tarkin descended the ramp. Alongside the group stood a full company of stormtroopers, in addition to Sergeant Crest and the remaining 6 members of Vader's personal detail. "Welcome aboard, Governor Tarkin," the commander said, stepping out of line to greet him. "Good to see you again, Ross. I wish it were under better circumstances." "We'll just have to make them better." Tarkin smiled without amusement. "Where is Lord Vader?" "Starfighter Bay. I'll escort you." The commander turned to dismiss the others, then gestured politely to Tarkin and set off across the deck. It took only moments to reach the Starfighter Bay where the commander left Tarkin to his business. Tarkin didn't need to look far for Vader's starfighter, as it was the only 8-2 among a squadron of V-wings. The absence of color might have struck Tarkin as a dramatic choice had black not been the Dark Lord's preferred color. What's more, many pilots during the war had made an effort to distinguish themselves, so why not Vader now?
Vader was standing between the weapons arms of the craft's split prow, tinkering with something, while a silver astromech droid stood by, plugged into a portable diagnostics unit. Without so much as a word of greeting from Tarkin, Vader turned and stepped out from between the forward laser cannons. "I trust that your fighter weathered the jump from Ord Mantell in good repair," Tarkin said.
"Not entirely, Governor. But the starfighter's troubles do not concern me at the moment. What have you learned?"
Tarkin lifted an eyebrow.
"An interesting question, Lord Vader." The foul humor Vader had been in since the attack at Lukaszek hadn't faded.
"I am not referring to lessons, Governor. Do you have new information?"
Tarkin nodded.
"Something we need to discuss in strict confidence."
Vader turned to respond to a series of urgent twitters from the droid, then wordlessly led Tarkin to a small, unoccupied situation room adjacent to the starfighter bay. The room featured a holotable and an array of communications modules.
"Our isolation is assured," Vader said. "Now, what have you learned?"
"I believe I have discovered a way to predict where the Carrion Spike will next emerge."
"Your prediction will need to improve greatly on our hunch at Galadran, Governor."
"I've removed some of the guesswork."
Vader waited.
"Several things before I speak to my forecast. First, the device serial numbers we recorded on Mercana indicate that the components were in fact part of a separatist communications cache, confiscated by the Republic during the war and warehoused in an Imperial depot until they disappeared sometime within the past 3 years.
"Disappeared?"
Vader said.
"Like the warship modules and droids you traced from Sentinel Base."
"Precisely. Sold, stolen, or perhaps given away."
"All three possibilities implied the conspiracy of insiders."
Tarkin smiled with purpose. "There's more. The dissidents' attack on the Galadran wheel was especially well-timed, in that a Victory-class Star Destroyer had jumped from the system not an hour before the Carrion Spike arrived." Vader considered it.
"The dissidents knew."
Tarkin nodded.
"They may be working in tandem with a scout ship, or perhaps the warship observed at Sentinel Base."
"Or receiving help from the same insiders who provided them with confiscated equipment."
Vader paused.
"The Emperor wishes to make an example of them, Governor. But he demands that we reel all of them in, not simply those who pirated your ship."
"And so we shall, if my calculations are correct." Again, Vader waited. Tarkin prized his datapad from the pocket of his tunic and tasked it to interface with the holoprojector table. A rotund star map resolved in midair, which Tarkin manipulated from the datapad. The Carrion Spike's movements were indicated by a zigzagging red line, annotated by measurements and calculations.
"Fuel consumption,"
Vader said after a moment.
"I should have known you'd be ahead of me."
"I am not unfamiliar with the method, Governor."
Vader didn't offer an explanation, so Tarkin went on, using his forefinger to highlight his statements.
"The ship was fully fueled when it left Sentinel Base. We didn't bother refueling on Coruscant for the jump to Mercana, as there was more than an ample supply for the round trip. From Mercana, however, the ship jumped first to Fiel, then to Galadran, and then to Lukaszek. We have no way of assessing, let alone knowing, where the corvette is at present, whether it is in hyperspace or parked in some local star system. But either way, its fuel is in short supply. And unless the shipjackers have completed their mission, a supposition I find highly unlikely, fuel has to be their next priority." Tarkin made adjustments to the star map, magnifying an area of the local sector. "Fuel requirements for the Carrion Spike are not ordinary, and replenishment sites out here are few and far between. In fact, calculations suggest only two options. Here," Tarkin pointed, "at Gromas in the Perkel sector, or here, at Findar in the Mandalore sector." Vader circled the map twice before coming to a halt and looking at Tarkin.
"As it happens, Governor, I am acquainted with both worlds.
Now Tarkin waited, but once more the Dark Lord offered no explanation. Like Lukzek, Tarkin continued, Gromas supports a mining operation, for Frick, I believe.
Yes,
Vader said. The Empire has a depot there that includes a full range of fuel options. Findar, by contrast, was attacked by separatists during the war, and hosts what is little more than a large tanker in fixed orbit. The property of a criminal cartel some 20 years ago, it is now operated by subcontractors as a fuel and service facility for Imperial starships.
Two options,
Vader said.
Gromas presenting more difficulties.
The shipjackers chose Lukazek over Namcharius, or even Belderone, and they transmitted their attack live over the Holonet. If, then, their plan is to spread both destruction and propaganda...
Gromas would be the expected choice, if only because of its relative importance.
Tarkin nodded slowly. It's certainly the target we should provide to the intelligence agencies. Vader nodded slowly, in full understanding of Tarkin's implication.
I'll inform the Emperor.
The Carrion Spike may already be in motion, Tarkin said, squaring his shoulders. As if in echo of Tarkin's posture of readiness, Vader planted his fists on his hips.
Then we have no time to spare.
Chapter 15. Negative Capability. The Carrion Spike drifted above a lifeless volcanic planet in a star system designated by number rather than by name. The crew was already assembled in the conference cabin when Teller entered, wearing the uniform of an Imperial commander.
Turn around so we can get the full effect,
Honora said from one of the chairs that surrounded the cabin's circular table.
Doesn't fit you like it used to,
Carla said. Teller stared down at himself in disappointment.
Poverty will do that to a being. He raised his head to speak to all of them. But I've got good news.
Good news from a human dressed as an Imperial,
Selleck interrupted, fingering the tuft of fur on his cheek.
That has to be a first.
What did our ally have to say?
Dr. Artos asked.
A task force has jumped for Gromas.
Artos' side-facing eyes grew vivid with interest.
Confirmed?
Teller nodded once, from multiple sources.
Then you were right about Tarkin, Hask said.
Teller hitched up his trousers and straddled a chair. When he was with Outland in the Greater Seswena, they used to track pirates by calculating fuel consumption. Outland would track them to a fuel depot and swoop in. The Jedi did the same. You just have to know how much fuel a ship started out with, and you have to be reasonably certain of its itinerary. Doesn't always work, but when it does, it works like a charm. He glanced at Kala. You glad now about taking the extra time on Mercana? The Korovar wrinkled his face, but nodded.
Even with Imperials jumping for Gromas, Hask said. Every depot between here and Centaurus has got to be on the lookout for this ship.
Teller compressed his lips. I never promised a sure thing. The altered transponder signature worked at Lukazek, and there's no reason to think it won't work again. To most Imperial installations, we're just another corvette running low on fuel. But that doesn't mean something can't go wrong. If that happens, we have enough fuel to jump at the first sign of trouble.
To where and then what? Selleck said.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, Teller told everyone. For now, we follow the plan.
Hask was shaking her head, her slanted eyes narrowed.
We should have stashed fuel somewhere, refueled ourselves.
Teller scowled at the Zygarian. We broke the bank getting that shipment to Mercana. He gestured to himself. Like I said,
Poverty wreaks havoc with a diet. Hask looked away from him, a frown contorting her angular features. Sotella turned to Honora.
Good job with the holovid. It's getting attention all over.
She shrugged.
Just doing my job, Teller. Same as ever.
Teller grew serious as he swung to Carla.
Speaking of jobs...
Done,
the Korovar said.
Although I had to spend extra time in decontamination.
I thought your complexion looked ruddier than usual.
No joke, Teller,
Carla said.
That stint could cost me a couple of years.
If it's any consolation, there'll be a higher cost to the Imperials.
That part doesn't bother you at all, does it?
Hask said with a sneer.
The indiscriminate killing, I mean.
Teller frowned.
Indiscriminate? What, because not all of them are soldiers? This is where you draw the line?
People have to work, Teller,
the Zygarian said.
Don't kid yourself, Hask. These aren't civilian targets. They're Imperial installations, staffed by people who have bought into the Emperor's sick vision of the future. For you, your queen, me, and everyone between here and the unknown regions. You've seen the recruitment posters. Serve the Empire and be a better being for it. That doesn't turn your stomach. Anyone who willingly serves is a traitor to life, Hask. And don't tell me they don't know what they're signing up for, because it's as clear as those posters on the wall. It's enslavement, suppression, military might, the likes of which none of us has ever seen.
He worked his jaw. I won't go peacefully into that future, and neither should you.
Hell, why are you even with us if you haven't thought this through by now?
Honora made a conciliatory gesture.
She knows. She just forgets sometimes.
She glanced at Hask.
Don't you?
Hask returned a brooding nod. But Teller wasn't through.
Look, whether they're mining ore for Tagkol or refueling Imperial warships, it comes down to the same thing. Standing with the Emperor. Our high-minded leader, who on his most benevolent day is still worse than Vader. The idea, Hask, just in case you've forgotten, is to put the fear into anyone who's even contemplating joining up. To slow the death toll, Hask. And as payback. Do you get it or not?
I get it,
Hask said finally. Honora slapped the tops of her thighs and laughed shortly.
Tell her, sometimes you are so straight out of a holodrama, I can't decide whether to cheer or applaud.
My production team on Coruscant would have made good use of you. Teller glanced from her to Hask and snorted in derision.
Artists, if the Emperor has his way, you'll be the first ones targeted for eradication.
He waited a long moment.
Are we done?
Heads nodded in assurance. Teller looked at Honora.
Speaking of holodramas, let's see how I look with red hair.
Tarkin, dressed in a black flight suit, was waiting in the hangar command center when the ship reverted to real space at the rimward edge of the Findar system. Floating above a holoprojector was a one-quarter scale holopresence of the tanker facilities administrator, a yellow-eyed, lugubrious-looking humanoid sporting a pair of thin green arms that dangled past his knees.
Refueling has been completed, Governor Tarkin,
the Findian rasped in basic.
The corvette is preparing to detach as we speak.
Good work, Administrator. You performed the refueling according to my instructions.
We did, though it took considerable effort.
The Empire looks kindly on those who cooperate in such matters.
And I look forward to whatever kindness you're willing to dole out, Governor. But you should know that the ship is assailable. My workers and the stormtroopers here are more than willing to take the crew head-on.
No, Administrator, Tarkin said, in a way that brooked no argument. You mustn't raise any suspicions. What's more, the people aboard that ship have had plenty of time to prepare for this. You and your workers would be killed.
If you say so, Governor.
I do say so. Have you a recording of the commander? The Findian nodded his huge, snub-nosed head.
Transmitting it now.
Tarkin squinted at the hologram that appeared alongside the hollow presence of the facility administrator. Dressed in an imperial uniform, the man was tall and lean, with thick red hair and a raised scar on his left.